Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, live from Chicago. George Wilder Jr. Show. Keep it right here. It should be fun.
The hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
Excuse me, I'm trying to clear my throat as I want to say, hey, everybody, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago, Illinois, the greatest city in the country as far as I'm concerned, but we have our problems. It's great. It's a great day outside of my studio. I mean, the sun is shining. People are in shorts. People are in short shirts, blouses. You know, it's just a wonderful day. It feels like spring. We were out there earlier. It feels like spring. And it's about time because it's been cold, gray, rainy, cloudy, just plain miserable. Miserable. The type of weather just makes you want to just not want to go anywhere, stay in the house and just sleep all day, stay in the bed. You know, it was this type of weather. And of course, you don't want to stay in the bed. You want to get out there and enjoy yourself. You got things to do. You got to go to work. You got to do this. You got to do that. You know, and the weather can be so, so disappointing. But today, and according to the forecast for the rest of the week, it's going to be summery-like. But we cannot get out of not getting any rain. May flowers bring spring showers, as they say. But I don't know. To me, the season is all mucked up. But anyway, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. That's my gripe today for the weather. I believe it's around 60 degrees where I'm at. I'm near the lake. It's always cooler near the lake. It's about 70 or 80 inland, more likely 70. And, you know, that's great. And further out south and further out west, it's a lot warmer than it is by the lake. And that's a proven fact, folks, because I live by the lake. So whenever I travel from the north side to the south or west side, it's always nicer in terms of weather. And but you know, being near the lake, I think we love it near the lake because we love the atmosphere or the environment or whatever, and we just love it. We just love the area. And whether it's cooler by the lake, colder by the lake, I mean, we would not have it any other way. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me. I'm on Amazon.com. It's a lot of my work up there. It's great stuff. It's fiction. Some of it's nonfiction, but it's whether it's nonfiction or it's fiction, it's great stuff. So check that stuff out. It's a lot of hard work, folks. It is. All right. My guest for today is hopefully author Keith Keller. He will be with us pretty soon. He's going to tell us what he's all about and why we should pay attention or listen and why he deserves the attention. So at whatever he does, you know, so if he should show up, a lot of times the guests forget that they have a schedule, and a lot of times, but that's understandable because a lot of my guests on the show, they're very, very busy people. And I do understand it, and I know you out there, you understand that also. Okay, so this is the George Wilder Jr. Show, and it is a great day outside my window. The reason why I feel so giddy and so up is because of the weather. The sunshine is just shining through my window, and that's great. And that's wonderful. Okay, let's move right along. All introductions are over, so let's move right along and get right into it. Okay, we're going to I've been blasting Bruce Rauner, the governor of Illinois. I've been blasting all of these assholes, politicians in the legislature in Illinois about their non-action on a lot of things that are going on in the city of Chicago. And I've been telling you this for a long time, especially in the last few shows, about the population decline in the city of Chicago. People are leaving, and it's not me saying that, folks. It's the United States Census. It's documentation. This is federal and state documentation saying these things. And it is so true. People are leaving the city of Chicago as well as the state of Illinois. And we know why. We know why. High taxes, monumentally high taxes. No budget. There's no budget. There's no budget means having no budget for the state of Illinois means that the state cannot spend money because they don't have a budget. You know, if you don't have a budget, you can't spend money. And that's the same thing as with the state. The state has the money. The state can come up with the money. They can propose and present a spending bill to the governor. But this asshole is just going to veto it because he doesn't want to see see Illinois prosper. I mean, yesterday there was over 10,000 people down in Springfield protesting Bruce Rauner, the governor of Bruce Rauner, because he's trying to bust unions. He wants to bust unions. He can do some things at weakening unions, but he can't really get rid of unions altogether because we have a Democratic legislature, and that is not going to happen with them. That doesn't hold water with them. So it's dangerous. We are in trouble. Chicago is in trouble of – actually, Chicago is in danger of becoming the fourth largest state in America because, as I've said earlier, we are losing population. People are leaving. And I just stated a couple of the reasons, and there are more. It's expensive to live in Chicago. It is expensive. This is one of the reasons to why so many people in this city, they're homeless. They can't afford decent housing in a decent-looking neighborhood or community. You're going to pay. Chicago is very expensive. We've got taxes, property taxes that are high. We've got sale taxes that are high. We've got Cook County taxes on top of all of that. And the guys in the legislature in Illinois, they want to raise more taxes. The property taxes enacted, I believe, last year by this crooked-ass mayor, Mayor Rahm Emanuel, $588 million in taxes, property taxes. For every property manager, for every condo owner, for everyone who's paying rent, no one gets out of this. If you have a house, car, condo, apartment, you're going to be paying property taxes. It's ironic that a lot of people who live in apartments think that they do not pay property taxes. Yes, you do. You pay them. You pay them. If your rent is $1,000 a month, your taxes, that property taxes is in there with that rent. You're paying it. And a lot of people have apartments where they don't pay light bill or electricity. You're paying for it. It's in with your rent. Nothing is free, folks. Nothing is free. You're paying out of your nose, especially if you live in the city of Chicago. It is expensive. A lot of people can't afford it because of the taxes, the high taxes, and on top of taxes, 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 and they're thinking about raising more taxes to pay for fire, teachers' pension, police officers. This is where some of this stuff is going. And we cannot forget high crime. That's another reason people are exiting the city of Chicago. High crime. Ongoing crime. Just this past 24 hours, I think there were 24 people shot. I haven't heard of anybody dying yet, but they're saying 24 people were shot. You know, this is a Thursday, okay? And this is not the weekend. The weekend hasn't started yet. And oh my God, the weather's going to get hot and muggy. It's going to be beautiful. And when 6, 7, 8 o'clock and 9 o'clock comes, you better have your ass in the house. Because these the thugs, the shooters, the drive-byers, they're going to be out full force. The problem here is we need, Chicago needs and some other city needs, the United States Army or the National Guard or something assisting in this. Because the police in Chicago, they are overwhelmed. They cannot do this. One of the reasons why crime is so high in Chicago, there's a lack of police presence in some of these neighborhoods. I mean, when you have a lack of police presence, you have a lack of deterrent. There's no one in these neighborhoods that are deterring these people, these criminals, from committing a crime. If there was saturated police presence in some of these neighborhoods, which it should be, I think the crime numbers would go down because the bad guys would say, hey, wow, the police is here. The police, they're here all the time. They're here all the time. We can't get nothing done. We can't do anything. That's a deterrent. You're stopping them from committing a crime. But the police are not in these neighborhoods 24/7. The police, they're not saturating these neighborhoods. If the manpower is down, get help. Go... The Army, the National Guard. I don't know. These politicians have something against putting the Army or the National Guard in these crime-ridden neighborhoods to get these thugs and shooters and killers out of these areas. What is it, Mr. Mayor? What is it, Mr. Governor, that you can't swallow your damn pride and start protecting these people, these most vulnerable people over there on the west and south sides of the city? That's one of your jobs, is to protect the people of the state that you supposedly and city that you supposed to be representing. I mean, every time I see this mayor, he doesn't say anything about crime. If he does say something about crime, he and the superintendent, the new superintendent, Eddie Johnson, they're putting the blame on parents. Parents, they're blaming the parents for their kids' behavior. In some ways, I can understand that. In some ways, I can agree. But you cannot put all of this on parents. We got some knucklehead parents. We got some idiot parents. We got some parents that do not know what they're doing with their children. Yeah, but we have a police department too. Where the parents fall short on trying to teach their kids to stay out of trouble and they get in trouble, that's where the police come in. I totally agree. I've written a book blasting a lot of these so-called parents. But let me say this. Do not tell a parent that he or she is a bad parent. They're going to get mad. They're going to get pissed off. They're in denial. A lot of parents are in denial. But once their kid is in trouble, oh, not my kid. He didn't do it. Yes, he did. But the superintendent and the mayor, like I said before, they are putting the blame on parents. Yeah, and I agree. I do think a lot of parents have to step up if they can step up. Some of them are totally uneducated. Some of them are ghetto. Some of them are just, you know, mentally ill, or they just don't have it, or they just aren't into educating and bringing their children up the right way. They can't do it for something. They're on drugs or something. They've been in jail. You know, we've got some awful parents. There's no doubt about that. But also, on the other hand, we have some great parents, beautiful parents, parents who are always there for their children. And I've written a parenting book also giving parents advice on how to deal with some issues with their children. And I do think that I had the authority to write that book because at one time I was a single parent on my own. And I think from those experiences gave me the right to write a book on parenting. And I think it's a pretty good book. It's straight to the point, though. I mean, I'm blasting some of everybody. I'm blasting parents. I'm blasting teachers. I'm blasting the police officers. I'm blasting the people out here that's going around gunning people down. You know, I think it's a pretty good book. It's a novel, but you can get it. It's called They Are Our Children. It's a book that – it's one of those books it's like a diamond in the rough. You know, so many people don't hear much about that book, but I've written it about 3 or 4 years ago, but it still holds up today. It's called They Are Our Children. I have had a little criticism about the book, saying that it's too blunt, that I shouldn't be blaming teachers for this, or I shouldn't be blaming parents for this. But every day I look out here on the street and I see these young people going wild and crazy, and it goes right back to the parents. However, we have a police department that's getting paid money to serve and protect the citizens of Chicago, and they're not doing it because people are dying. Crime is up. I mean, it's going to go through the roof this summer. I don't know how some of these cops and some of these politicians pick up their paycheck every week or every 2 weeks, knowing that they've done exactly nothing to protect the most vulnerable in this city. Sometimes I think it's racism. Emmanuel and Bruce Rauner will not get up off their happy asses and do something about the carnage in Chicago. We people are leaving. This is why people are leaving. And these people, these politicians, all they want to do is raise taxes, 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 taxes. But when people are leaving your state, people are leaving your city, these people are taking their incomes with them. They're taking their money with them. They're taking their tax dollars with them. Politicians will not get their money because they're taking their money out of the city. They're taking it out of the state. That's bad for the people who want to raise your taxes. They won't get it. And you can't tax the poor. You can't tax the working poor because they have no money to give, period, even for taxes. So a lot of the things that these politicians are doing or not doing is not beneficial to the state. Mark Rahm Emanuel and both Bruce Rauner and the legislature, the Democratic legislature, are finding ways to tax, tax, tax on top of tax, tax, tax. We just had a Cook County sales tax increase. And they're talking about, you know, raising more taxes on a cup of coffee. If you get a 12-inch cup of coffee, that's going to be 12-cent tax. They're going to tax it by the ounce. You go out and buy a 2-liter soda, that's going to be taxed by the ounce. That could be maybe 60 cents on that soda. You know, they're finding creative ways to get your money. They're even finding ways to get your money without you even knowing that they're taking your money. And these are a lot of reasons of why people are leaving. Do you think these guys are backing off these taxes and because people are leaving? No, they're going to stick it. They're going to stick these taxes to the people who stay. But that's not going to be many. That's not going to be many. Many people, the only people who are staying here are people who are steadfast and who can afford it. And that's not many people. And another segment of the population that's staying in the city instead of leaving is because they can't afford to leave. They don't have anything. They're on food stamps. You know, they're on welfare. They're living in the slums. They can't to go anywhere. Lord knows they can't afford to pay these high-ass taxes. So I think that's one of the reasons why you have so much crime in the city, because maybe the mayor and the governor, maybe they want this. Maybe they want this crime to continue. Maybe they want to push the black people, African Americans, away from these neighborhoods, the South Side and the West Side. Maybe they want them to kill each other off so they can bring in the bulldozers and start erecting condominiums, museums, libraries. I've heard that, okay? That is a notion that someone may be thinking of in the governor's office, because they're not making any effort, folks, to try to stop the violence. Rahm Emanuel gives it lip service. At least he gives it lip service. That's about it. But Bruce Rauner, the governor, he doesn't mention crime in the city at all, as if he's oblivious to it. I actually think this guy is a racist. I actually think that he doesn't like Chicago public schools because it's filled with union members, and he hates unions. This is why they were down there 1,000 or more, 10,000 or more, and Bruce Rauner played it off. When he saw the rally of 10,000 people against him, against what he's doing, he played it off. He said something like, well, if rallying was a cry for a better Illinois, we would have a better Illinois. He says something to that effect. But anyway, he's always trying to play things off when people are in his ass. This guy is more of a coward than old President Obama. He says stuff and then he runs off. I mean, he gets behind his, you know, goes to one of his 10 homes or something and talks from his, you know, talk from inside of his home, or he talks from a distance so you can't get at him. I think Bruce Rauner is a coward. I mean, he doesn't speak to the public, and he's not in a way where you would probably ask him questions. He's going to answer his questions any way that he wants to answer them. He's going to put his questions, his answers any way that he wants. He's going to spin. He's going to pivot. He's going to say, that's not right. That's none of your business. You ever notice that a politician, you ask a politician a question, they actually never answer it. They talk all over the question, all around it, above it, below it, but they never answer a direct question. This is the way Bruce Rauner is. This is the way Mary Emanuel is. Lord forbid Hillary Clinton. They never answer a complete question, the direct question. They pivot. Sometimes they don't answer the question at all, but they keep talking. You know, so people are actually leaving the city. People are leaving the state. There's no doubt about it. I mean, we've got a – let me see. I had a note here. I think there's 2.7 million people left in the city of Chicago. That's down from 3,000. You know, and let's see. Trump. We have 2.7 million people in Chicago. We are about to be overtaken by Houston, Texas. We're going to sink to the fourth largest city in the United States. Some people say, well, it'll be 10 years before that happens, before we become the fourth largest state. But I'm thinking if we're going to become the fourth largest state sooner than 10 years. if we keep getting politicians like Bruce Rauner and Rahm Emanuel, two people who don't give a damn about this city or this state or what's happening on the south and west sides of the city, blaming parents. Don't blame the parents. Your job is to serve and protect people from dying needlessly. And I'm going to say this again. Somebody ought to call out the National Guard. Somebody ought to have some balls to call in the United States Army for help. People are dying. Children are dying. Seniors are being murdered. Give me a break. The police can't handle it. They've tried for years and years and years. It is not working. You can hire all the police superintendents that you want. The more you hire these superintendents, the more you die. Because the police are not doing their jobs. Maybe they're afraid. I don't know. Maybe the manpower is down. Maybe they need to hire more people. But they're not going to hire anybody else because they're, well, we don't have a budget. And we don't. And who do we blame for that? We blame Bruce Rauner for that. He comes up with all kinds of excuses to why he cannot sign a budget into law. He comes up with all kinds of excuses of spending this and spending that. Every time the legislature puts a spending bill on his desk, no matter what it is, before it even gets to his desk, he says he's going to veto it before he doesn't even look at it because it doesn't incorporate his turnaround agenda. And his turnaround agenda is busting unions, taking away workmen's comp, making workplaces right to workplaces. That means without a union. He can't stand unions. And like I said yesterday on the show, the reason why he doesn't understand like unions is because they're too powerful. They're too powerful, and he wants that power. He doesn't want that union to have that power. He wants the power. This guy wants to take over the Chicago Public Schools, but nobody will let him. So he's going to take $74 million from the Chicago Public Schools and give it to the rich schools. He doesn't like the Democratic legislature, the House or the Senate and the legislature. Why? Because they have too much power. They have more power than he does. And he doesn't like that. He's saying, well, I'm the governor of Illinois. Why don't I have some of this power? I'm a Republican. This guy, Bruce Rauner, is looking out for his own. He's looking out for his buddies. He's trying to make money for them by taking over certain areas of the state. And he can't do it without legislative approval. And he's not getting it. So what this guy is doing, as I've said 1,000 times, he's using his veto power to wreak havoc state of Illinois. His veto power. This is not, none of this is being legislatively done. There's no vote. There's no call on nothing. He's just doing it at a sign of a pen. His veto powers. And it's working. It has worked. And it's going to continue to work. But like I said, folks, this guy's got 2 more years in office. If we can stand him, if the state is still standing by then, we can vote his ass out. He will not get back in. Because his approval ratings are in the damn tank. His approval ratings are in the gutter. He is not liked. And it's understandably so, because he's trying to wreck the state. He's done nothing positive for this state. Everything that he's done has been negative. He wants to cut the pay of 60 to 70,000 state workers. He's messing with your money. He's messing with the middle class, the people, the heart and soul of this state. He's messing with labor, the heart and soul of the state. Because why is he doing it? Because he's mean, vindictive, and just an asshole. Okay? All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. I will be back, folks. We're going to take a musical break. Welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Donald Trump leads Hillary. But now they have this lead that's going back and forth. Now Hillary is leading Donald Trump. It's always by a few points here or there. Hillary is now saying that Trump is dangerous and Trump is totally not qualified to be president. She really ought to tell us something we don't know. She's saying that Trump is dangerous. Trump is not qualified to be president. We know that, Hillary. Tell us something we don't know. And she's now saying that she doesn't really rule out Bernie Sanders as her vice president. Let me tell you, folks, I think that's the best thing that Hillary can do. I think that's the greatest thing that she said, is that Sanders will be her vice president. It's great. But however, I don't know if Sanders won it. We have to dig into that a little bit more. I'm pretty sure he's going to be asked that about becoming Hillary's vice president. But at this moment, he's running for president of the United States. And he has tons of supporters, as you've seen at his rallies. I mean, his rallies are in the thousands, tens of thousands, if I should say. And she's talking about, and that's great. That's beautiful that she's talking about Sanders as a vice president. That would be great. If that could happen, there's no way Donald Trump will be president of the United States. I think without Sanders as running as her vice, as her mate, her vice president, Donald Trump is going to win this. Donald Trump is going to win this. There is no doubt, because I believe a lot of supporters from Kasich and Cruz have gone to Donald Trump. And if Clinton wants to win this, I think it's good that she wants to choose Donald Trump. And that's great and that's wonderful. And I'm all for it. But will Bernie Sanders be all for it? Child porn, gun charges for Trump delegate. Oh, my God. One of... I don't know, maybe several of Trump supporters' delegates are accused of child pornography, gun charges. I mean, this is Trump's crowd. What can I say? This is Trump. Hillary is saying that Trump is – his campaign style is that of recruiting ISIS members. He's another recruit of – remember when they said the same thing about the president of the teachers union in Chicago called Bruce Rauner a terrorist recruit? Hillary seems to be saying the same thing about Donald Trump. She may be right on that, because Donald Trump, some of his supporters, maybe not all, are racist, are pigs, are white supremacists. You know, they're violent, and they're saying Sanders' campaign, his supporters are just as violent, and they're charging Sanders with egging his supporters on. I don't think Sanders would do that. I mean, he can't monitor each and every individual who is a supporter. He can't do that. He can't go inside their minds. He can just say what he's been saying, that he doesn't condone violence of any kind. You know, And he's telling his supporters not to do that. Will they behave? Who knows? Who knows? But this is good news that Clinton wants Sanders for vice president of the United States. That's a great, that way she can bring all of Sanders' supporters with her, you know, and I think she'll have a clear path to the White House if she does that. That's great. That's wonderful. And I give her, I applaud her for that. And I applaud her for not getting in the gutter with Donald Trump. I mean, she said something the other day, and I totally agree. She said, Donald Trump is a bully. Why would anybody want to get in the mud with Donald Trump? Because you're just bringing yourself down to his level. And I totally agree when she said those things. Clinton doesn't rule out Sanders for vice president. All right, let's move right along. Let's see what we got here. Donald Trump leads Hillary. Hillary leads Donald Trump. It's back and forth everywhere you go. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. It's great, folks. The sun is still out there. This is wonderful. All righty, let's see what we got here. All right, we're going to do a segment on elder abuse. Here we go, folks.
My name is Carol Howell, and I'm with UC Davis Center for Healthy Aging, and it is my pleasure to introduce Dr. Laura Mosqueda. She is the Chief of Geriatrics at UC Irvine School of Medicine, and she's a professor of family medicine and holds the Ronald W. Reagan Endowed Chair in Geriatrics. She sees patients at the UC Irvine Senior Health Center and participates in research and education as well. And her topic today is on elder abuse.
Thanks, Carol. It's a pleasure to be here to talk to you about this important topic of elder abuse. It's going to be a challenging topic, though. This is something that we don't talk about very often, and I think we really need to start challenging everybody in our society to think about this issue of elder abuse and understand it a little bit more. It's challenging in a number of different ways. I want people to imagine what it's like in terms of what elder abuse really is, to really ponder what it means to people, to take it beyond just the fact that, oh, that's a real shame that this occurs in our society, but to understand it as the trauma it really is to the people who are directly affected by it and everybody who loves them. I want you to acknowledge that this really exists, and I'm going to prove it to you as we talk today. And I want you to believe two things. I want you to believe that anyone can be a victim and anyone can be a perpetrator. And this, I think, is particularly challenging for us to really understand and take in. Well, what do we mean when we talk about elder abuse? There are a variety of categories of elder abuse as defined in state law in California, and I have them listed here on the screen: physical, sexual, financial abuse, neglect by other people towards somebody, neglecting yourself, issues of abandonment and abduction where people are actually taken across state lines, and psychological abuse. All of these types of abuse that I've just mentioned are reportable abuse. In other words, we are required, many of us, to report these to the state if we have a suspicion, although psychological abuse or emotional abuse is an optional report. We're going to focus in on the topic of physical abuse, neglect, and some issues related to sexual abuse as well. I'm going to go through a few examples, and unfortunately I have to tell you that these examples are based on real cases that I have been involved in. Here's an example of financial abuse. A 55-year-old woman who threatens her mother, if you don't sign on the dotted line to pay for my car, you're going to go into a nursing home. Another example, a 30-year-old man who befriends a widow. She's lonely, she's depressed, she lost her husband less than a year ago. And what people who are sort of predators will often do is find a hole, a gap, an emotional need somebody has, and fill that. And what does he do? He obtains the password for her ATM card and offers to help her buy groceries. And then he also helps himself to cash so that he has some for his own spending to the tune of tens of thousands of dollars over a period of a year. Examples of physical abuse: pulling somebody's hair, in fact, dragging somebody by their hair across a carpet, throwing food or objects at somebody, denying access to pain medication, slapping, hitting, punching. A recent case I'm involved in involves a 16-year-old girl who was punching her grandmother in the face. These are the sad realities of what's going on. One of the more hidden types of abuse that I'd like to bring to your attention has to do with neglect. And before I give you some examples of neglect, I think it deserves a little bit of an explanation. When we talk about neglect, we're talking about a relationship, somebody who has assumed responsibility or care and custody for another individual who's unable to care for themselves. And when this person who has assumed this responsibility does not provide appropriate care, such as basics, food, clothing, and shelter, medical care, making sure the person's hygiene is reasonably taken care of, looking after things like health and safety hazards, when these things are not attended to in a reasonable way, we call this neglect. Here are some of the examples that I've seen. People who are lying in urine and feces, and I don't just mean a dirty diaper for a few minutes here or there. I mean people who are lying in their own urine and feces for hours, days, weeks at a time. People who have very elongated, filthy nails, matted hair, living in filthy conditions. People who are not fed or given fluids and they become malnourished and dehydrated. It's not good enough for somebody who's unable to get around to just leave some food at the bedside if they can't reach for it and feed themselves. People who develop deep open wounds that we call pressure sores, sometimes all the way down to their bones, because no one has repositioned them and they're unable to move on their own. These are some examples of neglect that we see. Well, how common is this problem of elder abuse? It's a great question, but it's a very hard one to answer. As you can imagine, it's hard to just knock on somebody's door and say, is anybody abusing grandma? So the question then becomes, how do we figure out how common a problem it is? We also need to understand that there are some difficulties in establishing abuse related to people's reluctance to even admit it's occurring. Not only can we not knock on the door to ask if anybody's abusing grandma, but grandma might not want to tell us if there's abuse going on. She might be ashamed that her own grandson is doing this to her. Many older adults fear losing their independence and, in fact, would rather remain at home in an abusive situation than go to a facility such as a nursing home. Again, a very sad reality. And unlike children, older adults can just sort of fade quietly away in our society and nobody thinks about it. Nobody questions it. With kids, if they don't show up at school, we wonder what has happened to them. But we're very accepting of older adults sort of disappearing, oh, they got sick and you never see them again. So it's hard to know really what's going on sometimes. People who are being abused might be so incapacitated physically, cognitively, emotionally, that they're unable to even report that they're being abused. So people might be too incapacitated to report, but the other thing that sometimes occurs is that signs of abuse may be missed or mistaken for usual aging. After all, it's pretty common to have bruises as we get older. It's not uncommon to have a hip fracture, and so it can be really difficult to tell whether or not some of these injuries were a result of abuse or just something that happened by mistake. So I'm going to give you our best guess or guesstimate in terms of how common abuse is, but we also want to recognize that it probably is an underestimate. The best study we have so far is called the National Elder Abuse Incident Study, published 10 years ago now, 1998, where there was some attempt to quantify the problem. And this is what they found, is that in a one-year period, there were 236,000 reports of seniors abused at home and 50,000 reports of abuse in nursing homes. I want you to really pay attention to this because one of the common myths is that abuse occurs in nursing homes and it's really not an issue in society, when the reality is that the vast majority of abuse occurs in private homes and the most common perpetrator is a family member. What did they learn? Well, not only do you have 236,000 reports of abuse in the community, 50,000 in nursing homes, but for every report of abuse, at least five, some people think maybe triple that, go unreported. So when you look at the numbers, you're talking about at least 1 million older adults in 1998 victims of abuse. This is a big problem. So what happens now when we start projecting out in terms of numbers of older adults who live in the United States? And let's take a look at a graph for just a moment to examine this issue. You can see that the number of people over the age of 65, of course, is rising at a very, very rapid rate. One of the wonderful things now is that our life expectancies have gone up in a very dramatic fashion in just the past 100 years. But pay attention in particular to this red line, people who are 85 and over. They are the most rapidly growing segment of our society in the United States. Their numbers of people over the age of 85 are growing at an exponential rate. Look at the way the number takes off after the year 2030, and that's not very far off. Why do we have a special category for elders? I mean, in California, the law is that after the age of 65 is when we call something elder abuse. Does that mean it's okay to abuse somebody when they're 64 and then on their birthday at 65 it becomes criminal? Well, the reason we really talk about this special category for elders is that as we grow older, we do become more vulnerable to mistreatment. And so it just becomes a practical matter to have kind of an age cutoff for it, which I think is a reasonable way to go. What are some of these vulnerabilities? Well, as we grow older, it might be harder to defend ourselves from being abused. It might be harder to defend yourself from somebody coming at you with a blow. So it might be harder physically to defend yourself. And certainly emotionally, it might be harder to defend yourself against some of the verbal attacks that can be landed at you. You also may be more dependent on others than you have in the past. We're all used to and enjoy being fairly independent creatures. And now if we begin to have some difficulty and we need help with very personal things like dressing, like grooming, like hygiene, all of a sudden there are more people involved in your life, more hands touching you, and again, vulnerabilities increase. There's also this fear that we talked about a few minutes ago, fear of losing your independence if a report is made. So now somebody might really be able to threaten you, sign over the house or I won't let you live in your own home anymore to help you stay in your own home. You'll have to go into a nursing home. Older adults are very susceptible to these sorts of threats, and that's quite easy to imagine. I want to spend just a moment talking to you about dementia as a special issue. I certainly have observed time and time again that people with dementia are particularly vulnerable to elder abuse. Alzheimer's disease, of course, is the most common type of dementia, and we need to recall that dementia is not just memory loss, but loss of other cognitive functions, so that people with a dementia certainly have short-term memory loss, but also have problems with things like judgment, reasoning, insight, language, difficulty comprehending things. And so you can imagine as people go through different stages of dementia, their risk of abuse also can be quite high. So in the early stages when you're having memory trouble and difficulty comprehending things, people might have you sign on the dotted line and you might lose thousands of dollars. You might lose your house, other sorts of financial abuse that occurs. As people then move through the different stages of dementia and in the very end stage be very dependent, they may end up suffering from some very severe neglect. Dementia gets much more common as we grow older. So if you look at everybody over the age of 65, about 3 to 5% of people have a dementing illness. But past the age of 85, you're probably dealing with close to half of our population with dementia. And remember back to that slide we looked at a moment ago in terms of the growth of people over the age of 65, the growth of the number of people over the age of 85 in our society. People who have dementia may be unable to report abuse. You may no longer be able to use a telephone or know how to make a report. One thing that really scares me is we tend to really discount people who have dementing illnesses like Alzheimer's disease. So if a report is made, they're not believed. After all, they have a dementia. We really can't believe anything they say, and they get discounted. And people, particularly in the middle and later stages, may be unable to even recognize that they're being abused because they have such severe cognitive difficulties, they don't even comprehend the bad situation that they're in. Well, why is this happening? Why does elder abuse occur? And we don't really know the answer to this question, but I want to throw out a few possibilities for us to think about, and perhaps you can argue about them with some folks later on. Is it a mental illness problem? or is it a caregiver who has, say, a bipolar disorder or has schizophrenia or has some other sort of mental health problem that makes them unable to properly care for a loved one? Is it that we just live in a violent society that now pushing and shoving and hitting people has become more commonplace, and this is now translating into older adults as well? Is it a sense of entitlement? I'm going to get that money anyway. I may as well get it sooner than later. Is it stress? Boy, I'm trying to take care of the kids. My husband wants dinner as soon as he gets home, and now I'm taking care of his mother, my mother-in-law, and I just can't handle all this, and she keeps asking me the same question over and over again, and finally I just can't take it, so I just feel stressed. Or is that an excuse? Is it, as many people in the domestic violence community talk to us, really an issue of power and control? And we certainly see domestic violence in late life. Is it an issue of ageism? Do we just not care about what happens to older adults in our society? Do we just feel that, well, they're old anyway, so it doesn't matter as much? This scares me, but I've heard people speak like this. It's not as important if an older adult gets abused and if a child gets abused, because they're not going to live that much longer anyway. I think this is a horrible notion, and as a society, we need to confront that many of us carry these beliefs deep within us. So, some questions to ponder. What is our responsibility as family members? What is our responsibility as neighbors and friends? Are we ageist? Or do we have some concern about violating privacy? And we're always trying to balance these sorts of issues out. We don't want Big Brother watching after us. On the other hand, if we have a concern about a neighbor or a friend who we haven't seen, what is our responsibility to check in and make sure that they're okay, that they're not being isolated and kept in a back room, and that nobody's allowing phone calls to come in? I don't have answers right now. I have questions that I'd like people to think about. What is our responsibility as a society? Are there laws that need to be enacted, or are there laws that are barriers right now to doing a good job in terms of care for older adults who are vulnerable? What role could the government play? What role should the government play? There's precious little funding right now that goes into research related to elder abuse, particularly when you compare the numbers of dollars that go into child abuse research, domestic violence research. Why is that? And who is the voice of these vulnerable elders to speak up to say, we need to do something more? What policies do we have in place right now that either allow or prevent elder abuse from occurring? So, for example, we have mandated reporting laws, and we now ask that the clergy make reports if they have a reasonable suspicion of elder abuse. Many of us fear making these sorts of reports. We fear that some sort of SWAT team is going to roll in and grab Granny out of the house, when in fact that's very far from the truth. What we have are agencies through the government called Adult Protective Services, who I think are some of the unsung heroes in our society, who will go to these homes, sometimes in dangerous situations, to check on an elder to see if they're okay. One thing I've learned is it's not my responsibility to confirm whether or not abuse has occurred. My responsibility as a healthcare provider and my responsibility as a citizen is simply to have a reasonable suspicion. If I have enough of a concern that abuse is occurring, I have a responsibility to report to Adult Protective Services to ask them to check on this person who we have some worries about. They'll then go to the home and hopefully try to make a face-to-face visit and establish whether or not there really is a problem going on. Why is this important? Why should you and the public really care about this issue? Remember this slide? Remember about the number of older adults who are growing in our society? Even if the percentage remains the same in terms of how common elder abuse is, the mere fact that we have growing numbers of people in our society means that this is going to be a growing problem, particularly because we don't yet understand enough about mechanisms to prevent abuse, which of course is our goal. So as the number of older adults in our society grows, and the number in particular of people over the age of 85, the most vulnerable members of our society, grows at an exponential rate, we have to care, and we have to really take more of an activist role in preventing and identifying and doing something when we think elder abuse has occurred. Someday this could be you. Any one of us can be a victim. Any one of us can be a perpetrator. We need to understand and believe these as truisms. I hope I've gotten you a little bit angry. I hope I've stimulated your interest so that you'll want to learn more about the issue of elder abuse. I hope that you'll want to get involved in either a small or a big way. A small way that you can get involved would be to just go and tell 5 people about what you've learned. Just tell 5 people that this is a problem, and you'll help us a great deal. You can also join an organization that we're starting called Elder Peace, which is really a grassroots advocacy organization. Because if you're 85 years old and you have Alzheimer's disease and you're being abused, you have no way to really go vote. You have no way to advocate for yourself. And we really need to help folks on their behalf so that this problem doesn't continue. I thank you for your attention.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio.
All right, welcome back to the show, folks. I hope you enjoyed that clip on elder abuse. I play it every now and then because I just, in my heart, I just know someone's out there, 80, 90 years old, being abused, maybe in a nursing home, maybe in their own home, who knows. And I always play and dedicate that clip to all of those who are being abused. Remember, if you see abuse, any kind of abuse, it could be kicking a dog, whatever, report it, you know, because it's wrong. It's totally wrong. All right, let's move on. The George Wilder Jr. Show. Obviously, my guest, Keith Keller, did not show up today, but, you know, show must go on. It must go on. I want to mention this, folks. If you're out there trying to get a job and you... You're out there trying to get a job. You're going to an interview. This is something I just learned. Actually, I didn't just learn it. I've known it, but this is something I'm going to bring back up. Anytime you're looking for a job, if an employer is thinking about hiring you, you were great at your interview. Your application and your cover letter were great. You know, next thing that employer is going to do is Google your name. Find out about you, because everybody who's anybody is probably on Facebook. Everybody who's anybody has probably done or said something online. So it's almost a criteria for getting a job is to check you out online. So it's weird. It's strange. In some cases, I don't think it's fair that what you do online is game for whether you get a job or not, you know. But, today's world, runaway technology and all of this animation and innovation, some of it's not right. I mean, that's scary. That's scary to me. You know, if I'm going out here to get a job, had I'm knowing my potential employer, the first thing they're going to do is run a Google search. That may be something I don't want him or her to see. You know what I'm saying? 347-857-1762. And for all you employers out there, now I've given you another arsenal. I've given you another weapon in your arsenal, you know, to Google potential employees. You know, it's scary. It is scary. Folks, you talk about privacy. Privacy has gone away. There is no privacy. I mean, anything that you write online, anything you put online, it's out there. It's out there for the entire world. It's out there. So if you don't want your private business, you know, and other things known about you, personal business, do not put it online, because once it's out there, it's going to stay. You can try to do all the deleting you want to, but it's out there, and somebody may even use it against you, like an employer. So there's no doubt about it. A lot of us are online. That's the way of the world. I mean, being online, being on Facebook, being on LinkedIn, being on other websites, having your own website. You know, this is what it's all about. But there's nothing wrong. I don't think there's nothing wrong with an employee actually being on Facebook. It's just that you have to watch what you say. You have to watch what you post. You know, you can't post a lot of things that may come back to haunt you when you try to get a job. You know, you can't do that because people are watching, people are listening, and people and they are making decisions, you know. So, you know, because every guest that I have on the show, I have to Google them. I Google them, you know, even if they send me their information to be on the show, I Google them to find, not to find anything bad on them, but I just want to, if you're going to be on my show, you must have you must be Googled, or you must have a website somewhere so I can find a little bit more about you. So once you're on the show, I can explain to my audience who you are and what you are and what you're here to offer. You know, but I don't think that, I think that's different from having an employer Google you in order for you to get a $50,000 a year job, you know, or even a $10,000 a year job. I mean, because like I've said before, most employers, when you're going to look for a job and you're doing that first interview or that first face-to-face meeting with that employer, the most thing that employer is thinking, how to get rid of you. That employer is thinking how not to hire you, even though they have lots of positions open. You know, they have all of these positions open and they need people. But once you go to that interview, they're thinking how not to hire you. Give them something where they can say, hey, wow, don't call us, we'll call you. And you have to be, I've done a show on this maybe a year ago, and you have to be vigilant to know this, that they're thinking of how they can get you out of the room and get the next person in there, you know. But if you're going to go for an interview, do not give an employer an option to tell you, don't call us, we'll call you. Well, see you later, I have someone else to talk to. Do not give them that option, because that's what they're looking for. And that's, you know, they have no problem doing that. And if they like you, the next thing they're going to do, once you walk out of that, once you're coming back for that second or third interview, that employer is going to Google your name. And they may know more about you than you know about them, you know. So that's just a heads up, folks. A heads up. If you know someone getting a job, your son, your grandson, uncle, husband, sister, brother, if you're lucky enough to get an interview or a second or third interview, the next thing is coming, they're going to Google your name, you know, find out what's out there. So be careful of what you put online, especially if you want to be employable, you know. So, all right, I hope that helped some people if they were thinking about putting up something not so nice online, you know. So, all right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, 347-857-1762. It is 7:06. It's still a great day out here, folks. People are riding their bikes. I'm kind of jealous because I'm stuck in my studio doing the show, but I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. And I'm also finding out, folks, that a lot of people in the United States, in America, do not have savings. They don't have savings for a rainy day. I mean, if your house burned down, God forbid, you know, you don't have any insurance on your apartment, you're going to lose everything. And you don't have money in the bank. You have money in the bank, but maybe $20 or $40, that's not going to help. A lot of Americans aren't saving. And why is that? They can't save. You know, saving is tricky, folks, because there are times when you can drop off $100, put that in the bank or put it aside, then something will happen where you have to use that $100 real quick. You know, so it's tough to save. It is tough to save, and especially if you're not making a good salary at your job, you got a bunch of kids, you got college and all this to pay for. So it's rough. It's rough. But I would say try to put aside at least $20 a week or a month or something, you know, and not touch it. However, I do understand when small emergencies might come up where you might have to take that money out of the bank, use it, and then you got to make sure you replenish it. Make sure you put it back into the bank. All right. And try to get your savings, you know, some substantial savings going on. You're going to need it because we all need something that we can fall back on in case of some trouble or something that we have to deal with. We have a little money in the bank that we can deal with. All right. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on LinkedIn. It's 7:08 straight up Chicago time. I think it's 60 degrees near the lake. That's better than 30, okay? All right. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. All righty. Let's see what we got here. Keith Keller. Oh, he will not be on the show, folks. Join me next week. I have a whole week of great people. Edna Kay, Tara Turner. This is her second time on this will be her second time on the show. Carrie Kuntz, Linda Williams. This will be her second time on the show. So it should be fun. It should be really, really fun. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. I think we have let me see. It is time for the brainy and clever quiz question of the day. Here we go. Hit it, George. Oh, yeah, we have a smart quiz. Oh, wow. I'm chewing gum, folks. We do have a smart quiz question for the day. We try to have one every day, a smart quiz question. And here is that question. How old do citizens have to be to vote for President of the United States? That is so easy. I'm embarrassing. It's embarrassing almost to say it. How old do citizens have to be to vote for President of the United States? Do we have the question? Do we have it? 18? You're right. That's the question. That's the answer. All right. As I've always said on this show is about making the world a better place. This show is not always about opinion or commentary or just hearing me rant because I'm pissed off at something. This show is about making the world a better place. And it's not a show where we just sit here in the studio and just talk. It's a show about action. If we're going to make the world a better place, talking, we're going to have to do more than just talk. Okay? We're going to have to put some action behind it. When I say put some action behind it, I'm not talking about going out here and starting a riot or hurting someone. No, I'm talking about making the world a better place using peaceful methods of doing it, because you can do it. Making your views known, making your presence known. And that's what this show is about, making the world a better place. And that's what it will always be about as long as I'm the host and long as it carries my name, making the world a better place, if that's possible at all, if it's possible And this show will always give advice on commentary or advice on this. I will always supply my own personal opinion on what I think about whatever there is I'm talking about, whatever topic I may be utilizing or whatever topic I may be on. But basically, boil it down to one thing. It's all about making the world a better place. Sometimes when I say anything goes, that means that you can call up and talk about anything you want, or you can just sit back and I will talk about anything I want with my guest on the show. So making the I'm tongue-tied, folks. Making the world a better place one show at a time. Each show that is produced is about making the world a better place. That's all it's about, and that's what I envision this show to be, and that's what I envision it to be for a long, long time. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. I will be right back, folks. Stay with me.
Find out if the drugs you are taking are safe at drugsafetynews.com.
Technically, we still don't have a candidate on the Democratic side. What we do have is Hillary Clinton, who believes that she is the presumptive nominee, and all of her supporters are out there telling us that she is the presumptive nominee. About a week ago, the hashtag #FeelTheMath began circulating, with stories saying that there was no possible way Bernie Sanders could win enough delegates to get to the nomination before the convention. Here's the funny thing about math. You don't get to have an opinion on it. Math is an exact science. And when you actually look at the numbers, Bernie Sanders does have a real shot at winning this nomination. Here's what's happening right now. When it comes to pledged delegates, Bernie Sanders trails Hillary Clinton by fewer than 400. I think the number is closer to about 360, 370. There's over 1,100 delegates left to win. So even if we round Bernie Sanders' deficit up to 400, there's still 700 more delegates left after he makes up that difference. Now, he's hindered by the fact that the remaining Democratic races are all proportional. So even if he wins 55 to 45, she's still probably going to get more delegates than him based on the superdelegate count. But if he wins every remaining race by 67% or more, he would get the nomination. But more importantly, when it comes to pledged delegates, he could prevent Hillary from hitting that magic number and leading us into a contested convention. And that's what he's been talking about, wanting to contest the convention. Now, personally, I would love to see Bernie Sanders get the Democratic nomination above anybody else. But I don't think contesting the convention is the route to go. If he doesn't get it, I fully believe that he should run a third-party candidacy. I think that is the only way that he would really make a difference in this race if he doesn't win the nomination outright. Contesting the convention is not going to do anything. It's going to sour a lot of Democratic voters. And so running as an independent, I believe, is the good fix for that. But the bigger problem here, aside from Hillary's supporters trying to lie about math, is the fact that they're lying about who Hillary Clinton really is. Just this morning, there was an article in the Huffington Post by Jonathan Cohn, where he says in the headline, yes, Hillary Clinton is a true progressive Democrat. Then he goes on to list several things, like you have to look at her record. Look what she said about the environment. Look what she's said about Wall Street. Look what she's said about this. And even check her voting record. She voted for a couple of good things with the minimum wage. She thinks we should raise it to 12, not quite 15, unless you're in an area where the cost of living is really expensive. You know, it's just, it's an incremental thing, like they keep saying, incremental. Same thing with the environment. Well, I have news for you, Mr. Cohn. The environment, fighting off climate change, first of all, Hillary Clinton is not progressive on that at all. She is further to the right than most Republicans. But fighting climate change isn't something you can do incrementally. We passed that time. Doing incremental change was something we could have done 15 or 20 years ago, but after 16 years of inaction from Bush and Obama, no, sir. It's time to act, and we have to act boldly, swiftly, and vastly. We have to make massive changes to the way we live in order to prevent catastrophe. Now, that's not opinion. That's what the best scientists are telling us now because we've done so little. So don't try to sell Hillary Clinton as a progressive Democrat to people who understand the truth, people who are capable of going online and doing their own research, or more importantly, people who've been watching her over the years. We understand what she's all about, and there may have been a time in her life during her career where she was very progressive. She had a very progressive voting record while in the Senate. And then what happened when she left the Senate? Do we just omit those years in between and just assume that she went from the Senate to running for president? No, we do not. We have to look at her time at the State Department. We have to look at the fact that she really did push Obama to get involved in conflicts that cost us American lives. We have to look at the fact that once she left the State Department, she went out there and made millions of dollars speaking to Wall Street banks that were under indictment. What would you say if Bernie Sanders went and spoke to a group of mafia members who were being investigated by the FBI? You'd say, wow, what a horrible lapse in judgment. You don't deserve to be president. But when Hillary Clinton does it, the same criminal caliber, but because they're wearing nice suits, you say, oh, well, it doesn't matter. You know, she's just giving speeches. It's not a big deal that she made, you know, a quarter of $1 million for speaking for 35 minutes. It's the same thing. Criminal is criminal. It doesn't matter what they look like or what they're wearing or how much they are worth. These banks are facing massive lawsuits from civilians all over the globe at this point for their criminal conduct. The Justice Department has slapped them with fines because they were able to prove that they did commit crimes. Now, that was a weak action by the Justice Department, but at least it shows that, yes, they understood these banks that Hillary Clinton was talking to are run by criminals. And those criminals are still there. So, Mr. Cohn, if you consider that a progressive Democrat, then perhaps you need to check your definition of progressive. Because Hillary Clinton has already told us that coal has to be on the table when you talk about America's energy infrastructure, even though last November she told us that she was going to effectively kill the coal industry and put all of those out-of-work miners to work in the renewable energy industry. 6 months later, and she's already backed off on that before she even gets the nomination. That's pathetic. That's not progressive. That's moderate Republican. And that's what we can get if Hillary Clinton gets elected. It's not a Democrat. It's not a progressive. It's not even a liberal. It's a moderate Republican. She will let big business continue to destroy the environment. She will let big banks continue to scam American citizens because those are her buddies. That's her bread and butter. That's her payroll. That's what's padded her bank account. You know, this race for president is getting very ugly. But it's not necessarily because of the two nominees. It's because of their followers. Hillary Clinton's followers, in spite of them claiming the opposite, are probably some of the most vitriolic and hateful people on social media that you can find. They're arrogant, they're disrespectful, they engage in name-calling, they're trashing Bernie Sanders, who has done nothing but fight for the little guy his entire career, saying that he's out of touch, that he doesn't mean any of this. Well, we can look at his record and see. But those people who are out there trashing the Bernie Sanders supporters, that's probably the dumbest thing you could do. Because Hillary Clinton, if she gets the nomination, will not win the White House if you've alienated half of the Democratic Party that supported Bernie Sanders. Then you're looking at a Trump sweep of winning by about 70 to 75% because you pissed off the wrong people because you just had to prove that you were right. Arrogance will kill you every time. And that's all I see coming out of the Hillary Clinton supporters right now is arrogance. They have been wrong throughout this entire campaign. They wrote off Bernie Sanders before he even announced that he was running. And it's hurt them along the way. And it's going to continue to hurt them. And it should continue to hurt them. Maybe they'll learn something. Even if she wins the White House, maybe they'll learn something. Because this arrogance is not going to attract new voters to the Democratic Party. It's not something that the millennial generation wants to see in a party as they're deciding what party they should support for the rest of their lives. Not only are you looking at losing this current election, but you're looking at losing the next generation of elections because you can't tone down your arrogance.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio.
All right. Welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It's about 3 more minutes left into the show, folks. And like I said before, we're going to have a whole slate of guests next week starting Monday. And it should be great. It should be great. A whole slew of guests starting next week. Hopefully, still somebody done wrote this down on their calendar and won't forget. But things like that happen. All right, you're listening to George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Blog Talk Radio right here. Click like. And always, always follow me on Amazon.com. Just put my name up in the audio, the text box there and click. And, you know, you'll see all my work just drop down in front of your face. That's some good stuff, folks. Believe me, fiction, nonfiction, it doesn't matter. Check it all out. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, 347-857-1762. I will be off for the next 3 days doing some writing, enjoying the weather. What do you want to say? You know, booking guests, lining up topics for the show, things of that nature. You know, this show is not easy to do. It's hard work, but it's enjoyable work. And your host needs some time off once in a while. So if you missed the show, always block. You can listen to any. I've got 100 and something shows on 67, maybe 167, 167 shows. They're archived. They're all over the place. You can listen to my shows all the time at your convenience. There's a lot of them out there, and most of them, if not all of them, are great shows, you know. So if you missed a show during the weekend, just archive a show, podcast a show, download a show, and listen to as many of my shows as you want. They're all there, and they're all good. Believe me, great guests. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, making the world a better place, one show at a time. We're making the world a better place. And you know what? I see some effort in this. I see us making a lot of effort in trying to make the world a better place because you're informing people who are not informed or people who are less informed and finding out that they're actually learning something. And that's what people want. People want to learn something, especially learning something to better their lives, to help them go along in their lives, to help them reach their goals that they're trying to get. And this is one of those shows that tries to do that, you know, because I don't want people to think that I'm the smartest person in the world. No, I have guests on this show that can outrank me, and I sit back and I'm quiet, you know. But this is a place where, I'm going to say this again, making the world a better place. That's what it's all about. All right, we're hoping to see you guys Monday on the George Wilder Jr. Show if we can go out before we – bye-bye, folks. Okay, if we can go out before –
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio. You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio.